You know, this is one of those topics that no one really wants to think about, but if you're a parent, a homeowner, married, or helping take care of aging parents, it's something that honestly deserves a little attention. I'm talking about estate planning. And before you tune out thinking it's complicated or expensive, that's actually why I want to mention trust and will. Trust and will makes estate planning feel way less intimidating than it sounds. They offer modern, attorney-designed wills and trusts that you can create online. And the process is surprisingly straightforward. In fact, you can create a will in as little as 30 minutes. That includes things like guardianship for your kids or pets, how your assets are distributed, and even healthcare directives. Don't wait until it's too late. Protect your loved ones with Trust and Will, the most trusted name in online estate planning. Go to trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. That's trustandwill.com/future for 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is here to bring us through some stories, some other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
John, how are you getting on?
Lovely to see you. Right, first story, Senegal we're going to go to first. And they've banned ministers from foreign travel for, I suppose, not an unexpected reason.
Yeah, this is all related to what's going on in Iran, or what's not going on, or what's going to be going on, or the mess that is Iran. And has to be said, it's affecting every country in the world. But as usual, African nations seem to be getting the brunt of it, or it seems to be affecting them worse. So Senegal is the latest country in that part of the world to announce measures that it's taking, but this seems to me to be something that they're just buttering up the people in general to set an example for measures that are coming later down the tracks, right? So last Friday, the president, Ousmane Sonko, said at a rally that he was giving, he was speaking at a youth rally, I think, for his party, and he basically said, look, we're going to ban ministers from foreign travel because the oil prices have doubled and it's just not in our national budget to deal with this. He said himself that he was going to postpone his own trips to Niger, Spain and France that he had lined up. So he's leading by example. But he also said at the tail end of the speech that his own finance minister was going to be announcing measures later this week, which would impact the rest of the country. He said he didn't want people to be alarmed, but he wanted to give them a sense of this difficult world, to quote him, and that's the situation.
Yeah.
Because things had been going relatively well in Senegal, at least in terms of the economy.
Yeah.
The IMF described it as robust, and there was a growth rate of 8% last year. They have a kind of a fledgling oil and gas industry, but it's not enough to be able to look after themselves. So they're really struggling.
Yeah. And there is, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a bit of a tourist trade in Senegal as well. There are resorts and stuff on that.
Yeah, there would be. Yeah. It's kind of starting off in that respect. Although I think it might have taken a bit of a hit there a couple of weeks ago when they introduced their latest LGBT anti-LGBT legislation, doubling sentences for people. So this guy, he's been in power for about 2 years at this stage, he came in with sort of there's still big public debt there. I think it's 130% of GDP, isn't that how they measure it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot to pay off still. So it's certainly could do without this, but it's not the only country in that part of the world, as I said.
Yeah.
I actually got a text last week from a contact in Malawi. A woman by the name of Claire Wheeler. She works for an NGO there called Standing Voice. She actually featured on this show about 3 years ago on an item I did, people working with albinism over there, if you remember. And she told me that the price per litre over there is $3.84. Whoa. That's in Malawi. I doubt people,
that's nearly the same prices in the US, and I imagine.
And what they earn in Malawi is going to be a lot less than that. South Africa did something similar to us where they reduced the government tax. Ethiopia sending employees on annual leave. South Sudan has started rationing electricity in the capital. So it's chaos.
Yeah. Chaos. Yeah. And we, yeah. Now, I suppose this is appropriate given the protests that are happening today around Ireland about supports for the price of oil, but it's, we kind of, I suppose, forget it's having a devastating effect on parts of the world that aren't anywhere near as well as off as we are. Right, the UK we're going to go to next. This is quite a disturbing story as well. This is about an increase in the number of stalking offences.
Yes. Now, this came off the back of data that was requested by the Lib Dems, the Liberal Democrats, who seem to want to launch something of a campaign around this, right? So they got their data from the House of Commons Library data bank or whatever, and they analysed and they found that there were over 135,000 stalking offences recorded last year. Now, to put that into context, 10 years previously, it was only 3,000. So it's gone from 3,000 to over 135,000 offences, right? Just to give you an idea, the Met, so that's London, they recorded just under 12,000 offences last year versus 647 10 years ago. Manchester, Greater Manchester Police, has gone from 96 10 years ago to over 10,500. So it's extraordinary stuff. So two things are happening. Obviously, there's more awareness of it.
Sure.
And, you know, reports of stalking are taken far more seriously than they used to be. But it's also the fact technology and the fact that we're not just people aren't being stalked physically, or as what happened to Emily Maitlis, the guy who was sentenced in her case, he was still writing to her from prison. And he got an extra 5 years added on to his sentence as a result. So it's not just those kind of physical activities, but it's the online activities now. And they're now acceptable, if you know what I mean, as
yes,
reported stalking.
Or at least certainly enabling to.
Yes. And what I mean by acceptable is they're accepted by the police as being, you know, criminal, as being criminal activity. So this is what's happening, and this is why the numbers have gone up. It's alarming, really.
Yeah. Now, these are convictions we're talking about.
No. So these are reports, but actually, on your note about convictions, the closest I can get to you for that is the Crown Prosecution Service says that the number of offences leading to charges, okay, increased from just over 2,000 in 2020 to just under 7,000 in 2024. That's a record high. Okay, so I see what you're getting at. I mean, there's a lot of reports, but it's only a small amount that actually lead to charges, and then who knows how many of them lead to convictions.
Because I suppose there's a difficulty technical difficulty. You could be stalked by somebody in another context.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's hard to...
Although it is worth saying, sorry to interrupt you, Sean, but it is worth saying that most NGOs say that at least half of the people who are charged with this or accused of it are ex-partners.
Right.
And then the vast majority of them are known to people. So it's not a case necessarily. So that the people that you're referring to there, as in people in faraway lands stalking people, are only a small proportion, according to what these NGOs are saying.
Okay, and you can stalk, I suppose you can stalk somebody electronically, you can track their phone or the other means of you can put physical tracking devices down.
There was one incident, there was a couple of incidents that really stood out to me where, you know, you've got Google Home or whatever, and an ex-partner might still dip in and control the lights and this kind of really sinister stuff. And make it quite scary for you. So, it's not good.
And is there a specific set of stalking laws in the UK? And I must say, at the top of my head, I don't know what the equivalent is here or if there are any.
There are stalking laws here, yes. And there are stalking laws in the UK. So, for example, I know that the maximum sentence for stalking is 10 years. So you can get that. So there is obviously laws pertaining to that. So yes, there are.
Yeah. No, because what I'm wondering is that is there within the stalking offence, is there equivalent to a barring order that you can? Yeah.
Yes, there is. And actually what the Lib Dems, just to go into it a little bit further, but what the Lib Dems are looking for is they're calling for what they're calling an emergency stalking protection notice. To put it in a better way, because it is quite complex, it's a preemptive strike, right? It's a preemptive barring order. So it's weird because, this raises a lot of questions for me, because this nearly assumes guilt on the person before the person has been prosecuted. But what they're hoping to bring in, it's a bit like, I think they have similar domestic violence emergency protection notices. what they're trying to do here is they're giving people time to gather evidence of stalking, and they're putting a barring order. And this is what they want to do. Sorry, I'm putting a barring order on them.
Yes. Yeah.
While they're gathering that evidence.
Yeah.
I
suppose the analogue in the barring order situation is if there's domestic violence, that's obviously a criminal offence of assault. But the barring order is kind of separate to keep the person away and whilst the violence,
yes.
The allegations of violence can be investigated.
Yeah.
God, it's... Yeah, it's disturbing, really, isn't it? Right. Japan we're going to go to next. And they changed the law about custody of children. What was the law previously?
Yeah, so that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
So in the past, they have a surprisingly high portion of divorce in Japan. In the first 10 years, about a third of all marriages end in divorce. Which I was surprised by because, you know, they're all about, you know, how they look and how society looks at them there in Japan.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what they have there. So in what used to happen was if you were divorced and you had kids, right, you could sort it out yourselves and decide, okay, whatever, dad can come over 3 times a week and mum gets the kids 4 times a week. And that was fine. However, if it was taken to court, custody would only be awarded to one parent. Right. That was how it was set. And I don't know why that is. Right. But that's how it was set. And in most cases, for historic reasons, I suppose, it went to the children went to the mother.
Yeah.
And if custody was given to one parent, that parent could decide to cut the other parent out of the child's life if they wanted to.
Completely. Yeah.
OK. It was completely up to the decision of the parent who had the custody to decide what to do. And so obviously that led to terrible sadness and estrangement and all sorts of breakdowns in relationships and that kind of thing. So they had lots of criticism at home, lots of criticism abroad. So they looked at this legislation and they passed the legislation in 2024 actually, but they've now changed the civil code and that took effect on Wednesday. So now if you go to court, the court can still decide to give to one parent. Obviously, if there's, you know, circumstances in which that is the best thing to do, but it can also decide to give joint custody. Okay.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing for this that jumps out at me is that parents who divorce under the old system are now eligible to have their custody arrangement reviewed by the family court, so that if the situation is that there, you know, there's only one parent who has custody. The parent who doesn't have custody can go back now and have that reviewed.
Okay.
And hopefully get access.
Are there rules about child support payments and that kind of thing?
I don't think there were before, actually, but they have brought it in with this civil code provision. And it says that it's 20,000 yen can go taken from the ex-spouse every month. And that equates to about 108 euros.
Okay.
So that's the minimum. I don't know. Is that good or bad? Or
I wouldn't say it was great.
Well, because I looked at it here in Ireland, and I think it's the minimum is something like 40 to 45 euros a week, which also isn't wonderful, to be honest. But I suppose you've got to look at it from different people, different circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. Well, indeed, and plus also in that kind of scenario, I would imagine if historically you had cases where one parent was just denied access to the children. Mm. Did that lead to those parents then taking extreme measures?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was cases of kidnapping. There was a famous case back in 2021 during the Tokyo Olympics where a French father who was based in Japan, he staged a hunger strike and he was calling attention. He said that his children had been basically kidnapped. And then a couple of years later, there was it's another sports thing, but a table tennis star who was a woman who was accused by her Taiwanese ex-husband of abducting their sons. And that got a lot of press, obviously, because she was quite a prominent figure. Now, in the end, they actually sorted out the situation. But yeah, it did lead to that. So there's hope there now that this kind of thing won't happen anymore. And that was an obvious flaw in the actual law itself.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Right, go so far as to say things are sorted out in Japan, but I suppose you could look at it as a positive change in Japan. Northern Cyprus now, where they're investigating IVF clinics.
Yeah, so just a little bit of background first on what Northern Cyprus is, as you know, okay? Cyprus is obviously an island, but it's split between the two. Northern Cyprus is not within the European Union. it's tethered to Turkey, effectively, yes, who have a big army there and who claim it, okay? But it's only them that recognises Northern Cyprus as an independent state, right? So just so people know, right? Now, the size of it is also important, okay? There's about 500,000 people living there, and it's smaller than the size of County Clare, all right? So it's a very small part of the world. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because in recent years, this has become a popular destination for British nationals seeking fertility treatment. Okay, I assume there's people from Ireland who've gone there as well, right? It's cheaper. They have a high success rate, or at least that's what they promise, and you get a nice holiday while you're there as well, all right? And that's what they promise. And it is a good bit cheaper, right? IVF is really expensive in this part of the world.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's absolutely fine. But I don't think there's that many of them in that part of the world. So when a scandal like this breaks, it's huge. And this has made, even though the investigation into this started in the UK, this has made front page news in Northern Cyprus, right? So going back to that investigation, this was a program that was broadcast by the BBC, or an investigation that was done by them. And they were tipped off by parents who had gone to Northern Cyprus a good few years ago and who had doubts over whether their children had been created, shall we say, using the correct egg or the correct sperm.
Oh, okay? Dear.
So I'll give you one example if I can. So there's a same-sex couple by the name of Beth and Laura, who are each biological mother to one of their two children, right? And what they wanted to do when they went to the IVF clinic was they wanted to have the same donor, right? And they were offered this fella called Finn from Denmark, apparently. But over the years, they had the first child, a daughter, and then they had a boy a couple of years later. But it became apparent that they looked nothing like each other, right? I've seen pictures of her. The daughter has blue eyes, he has brown eyes. And they conducted a DNA test and they discovered that the father wasn't actually the person that they had chosen. Now, the reason they wanted to do...
In both cases.
The reason they wanted to do it was because obviously they were having a child each, but they wanted to have a blood bond between them. And that was coming through the father, okay?
Yeah.
But it didn't work out that way. So with the help of the BBC, they went and they investigated this, and now it's gone back to Northern Cyprus, where the Ministry for Health has opened an investigation into a few families. So far, 7 children are involved. So the same-sex couple, and then there's a couple of others who didn't want to be named in the investigation. But you can expect that problems around this will probably broaden out a little bit.
As far as is known, are the problems with just one clinic or multiple clinics?
A few clinics, So one has been named in this report, but there are investigations being launched. This is what the Ministry for Health has said there, into several clinics across that territory.
Yeah. Bolivia, we're going to go to finally. Clowns are on the rampage there.
Yeah, clowns are on the rampage. They're out protesting. They're not very happy. So they took to the streets last Monday outside the Ministry of Education in La Paz. This was to oppose a decree that was published back in February that limits extracurricular activities in schools. Basically, the new mandate says that the government wants school to be school, and 200 days of lessons have to be completed each year. Mm. No extracurricular activities. The reason the clowns are annoyed is because they would often be brought in during school time and be paid for entertaining the kids on things like what they call, they have a thing in South America, it's a lovely idea, Children's Day, which is coming up actually on the 12th of April. So the clowns would be brought in, it'd be a big payday for them to entertain the kids. So they're not happy about this because it effectively means they're going to be out of money. They took to the streets and they were joined by tailors who work with the clowns and make their costumes, and also by photographers who often take pictures of the clowns during these school celebrations.
Yeah, and the reason why the government have done this is to save money, effectively.
Yeah, I think it's to save money. It's also to make it look as if they're doing something. There's a relatively new administration there, and they are going through terrible economic turmoil at the moment, mainly down to a reduction in production of gas, which, depending on which side of the Leninist Marxist argument you are is down to too much intervention from the state and so on, lack of investment, that kind of thing. They're in a bit of trouble there in Bolivia, there's no doubt about it.
Okay, so what should be, God help us, what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Well, besides ourselves and our families, Wednesday, when he's done blowing up the world, Donald Trump will be hosting talks with the head of NATO, Mark Rutte, which I'd say Rutte is really looking forward to. Saturday is the Grand National. So don't forget to place your bets. And then on... So I shouldn't advocate that, should I?
No.
Not really. Sorry.
It's your last time with us, Jonathan. Thank you for all the years of service.
Sunday, Hungary. This is a big news.
Yeah, this is
election
really
now
a big thing.
Is going to be a big deal. It's very tense. Orban was accused of a false flag operation there earlier in the week, maybe on Sunday, in cahoots with the Serbs. That was to do with bombs that were allegedly left near a pipeline. So it's all this kind of stuff going on.
And a lot of anti-Ukraine rhetoric. And
a lot of that Vance is showing up. Vance is flying over. So, I mean, with everything that's going on in the United States.
You'd think he'd have something else. Yeah, isn't he supposed to be in charge of the peace talks for, the end of civilization in Iran?
Exactly. And he's showing up there for a couple of days to sort of back Orban. And that's another story in itself. I mean, how are himself and Trump getting on? That raises questions around that. So that's going to be really interesting on Sunday.
Yeah. But at the moment, are the polls nudging towards it's the end of Orban?
The end of Orban and Peter Magyar, who is an ex-Fidesz member, actually, and was very high up. But it looks as if he's going to win. But look, who knows what's going to happen.
Indeed, yeah. Jonathan, thanks a million. Thanks, as ever, Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.